there are people who want to hear certain stories that if you don't share them, you don't give the opportunity for other people to realize that they are not alone in this struggle.
You have a very interesting perspective about grief, and I wonder where that vulnerability comes from.
It's a double-edged sword. We are all passing through, and depending on how we live here, life after this is based on what we do now.
When I heard you talk about the passing of your junior sister, I knew that that was something that was so dear to your heart.
My sister is no longer in pain, and I want to believe that she's in heaven. If I were to call my sister now and say, hey, do you want to come back here and pay bills and deal with the pain of cancer? I'd be like,
no, I'm good.
She's having the time of her life.
One of my biggest fears right now is getting a call and saying,
yeah,
I dread that day of my life. We thought you knew marriage.
Yeah.
You going through divorce. Did you ever look back at that decision and you went, maybe I did the right thing?
Love is every day, it's every conversation. Let me actually back up a little bit. The reason why I think many marriages fail, including mine, is because we're short-sighted. Like, oh, I'll figure it out. But we don't understand that it's a risk to be married. It's a risk to make a covenant with God if you are not ready to keep your end of the bargain.
Talk to me about your perspective on money, which you just talked about.
I will speak from a man's perspective because that's all I have anyway. It's necessary to know self-discipline. And I say that for myself more than for anybody.
I'm trying to dig a little deep.
The way you do your research, you make your guests want to just talk about their whole life story. So this is great. Keep it up.
What's up, my friend? Welcome to this episode of DRB. Before we jump straight into today's episode, I'd love to specially invite you to take 10 seconds and join our 21,000 plus smart friends on emails. I've been sending out emails for the last couple of years, and most of my friends will always write back and say these are like the favorite things that they look forward to on the internet every month. And so once you join our 21,000 plus smart friends using the link in the description below, we're going to send you out a mind-blowing email once every month for free. And you're going to get an email every time that an amazing episode like this goes live. So if you're joining us for the very first time or you're new to everything that we do, I'd love to say special welcome. Don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you listen to your podcast. And please check out the links in the description for very helpful resources. How are you feeling about yourself in this current phase of your life? I wonder what your answer will be to that.
I feel very blessed. Right. I was going to say determined. Because, you know, a couple of years ago, Facebook put up this thing where they say, how are you feeling? And they put options, you know, determined is one. I think it's funny. I'm like, how do you feel determined? What does that even mean? But I feel blessed, seriously, because when I look at my life now, this stage where I was this same time last year is 360.
Yeah.
360 degrees. Like, I could never have imagined that this is the life that I was going to be living right now. Neither where I am physically, mentally, emotionally, and especially spiritually. So
right.
I would say very blessed. Yeah.
Did this come from I'm trying to dig a little deep. Was it from, because I know that you shared a lot. And by the way, I have to put this out there. One of my favorite things about you, which I think that I'm still trying to learn, is how vulnerable and authentic you can be in how you pass across your message. Let me tell you how that affected me one time. So there's one of these episodes I think you're talking about grief. You losing your junior sister to cancer.
Yeah.
That had been a while after. And then you started sharing. I just found myself, initially I clicked on your video and I said to myself, let me just see what he's up to for the next maybe 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But I ended up watching 50 something minutes right up to the end because I was like, wow. But the thing that intrigued me the most was, and I can remember until now, I can remember the entire stories that you shared. You talked about how during the grief, you're expecting X and X person to come to your help, right? Or to reach out and say, hey, look, even if even if things are not fine between us at this point,
yeah,
at least reach out, say, I hear that you're in pain and I'm trying to reach out. And we talked about friends, you talked about you not being able to travel, all of that. And for me, I felt like that was so profound. I don't think that I've quite gotten to that point of being that vulnerable with my own audience or my message. And I wonder where that vulnerability comes from you.
I put up a form a couple of weeks, was it a month ago? I was trying to gather data from my audience. I actually spoke with you and you're like, you know, we'll find out from people what they actually want to watch and things like that. So I took your advice. Right. To start reaching out to people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that someone who has been consuming my content for a while said is that she missed when I used to be that vulnerable. Because something has actually happened. What I found out, and I think I want to believe that because I was married before, having the divorce changed my perspective on what and how much I share online specifically. Okay. And I'm still in this place where I'm trying to find out how much is enough, how much is too much, etc. But when you hear mm-hmm. feedback like this, what I'm seeing is it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because there are people who want to hear certain stories that if you don't share them, they will think they're the only ones who are going through it. They will think they're mm-hmm. the only ones who are in that kind of pain or that specific heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't share them out of privacy, you keep things to yourself, which can be good for you. Part of me is you don't give the opportunity for other people to realize that they are not alone in this struggle.
Right.
And to answer your question, though, the way that I became this vulnerable, which first of all, I think I'm still figuring it out, mm-hmm. is back in Cameroon, when I started writing online, there was no way to get paid online. There was no way to make money. There was no YouTube ads, nothing.
Yeah.
So I wrote because I like to write. I like to tell stories. I just enjoyed writing, whether people were reading or not. That's how it started. It was me just talking about the things that were happening. I was sitting in Malingo and I would see somebody walking around and I'll just imagine things and write those stories. And so as I kept doing that online around 20, I think I started in 2011, started writing online 2011, just before I came to GMC.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed that I enjoyed doing it and people would say, oh, wow, you said something that I thought, you know, I was thinking, but I could not find the words to put it. So mm-hmm. the reason why I find your particular feedback very fascinating is because I've been thinking about this, about how much I need to share versus not share, because I did all that writing and, you know, write about relationships and heartbreaks and how this happened.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
when I moved to the US, I kept writing about it. But mm-hmm. what happened now is that my marriage ended. And so I was in this place of... Man, I'm writing about all these things and all these stories. What do I even know about relationships? If I could not even keep my own marriage, then who am I to be writing about these kind of things on the internet? Mm-hmm. So that began a different cycle of me questioning myself a lot. And part of it is still there.
Did you ever get to, sorry, not to cut you short, but did you ever get to a point where, and this is might be on our side, where a part of you being vulnerable, maybe on the internet or sharing something, affected how people related to you or maybe in your relationship? Yeah.
Not so, that's an interesting way to put it. And I mean, interesting in a good way, because there are people now that I've met who think they know me because they've read my story online.
Right.
But the difficulty or what they don't realize is I only share what I want to share. I don't share everything. Okay. But it seems like I'm sharing everything.
Yeah.
And I only talk about my perspective, because one of the things I try to do, I did it unconsciously and I try to do it now a lot more consciously, is I tell my side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are involved. You would never go and ask them, hey, I read what Kamga wrote. Is this true? So I try to keep in mind the fact that it's my version of the things. It's my own way of experiencing what happened.
Yeah.
And it would be unfair for me to speak as though I had a view of their side, my side and all that. So people have indeed thought that they knew me because they listened to my stories or they read an article. And so they thought we had a relationship, but we don't have a relationship. You're just reading my articles. I don't know you like that. So, which is why the people that I've connected with, personally, offline, that's where I build relationships. But to answer your question quickly, yeah, some people think that they know me because of that. And the few times that has happened where someone, for example, start being too familiar, I've had to create more distance. Like, hey, we're not that close. Like,
right.
Yeah, you just read my articles. We don't know ourselves like that.
All right. There's something Trevor Noah said, which I watched. It's a very small part of it that he said, which has stuck with me. And he says, just in relation to what you said, and he said, sometimes when you are sharing all this content, and it's the same like we for most of the celebrities and comedians and all of these other people who are putting themselves out there, when you continuously share this content over a period of time, and over time, what happens is that people meet you and they are meeting you with that excitement.
Right.
And sometimes you go, have I met you before? Or like the energy is a little weird to you.
Yeah.
And he put it in a very interesting way. And he said, the reason is that these people have been creating a relationship with you for however long they have consumed their content. And to them, that relationship is cordial.
Yeah.
But to you, you have just been sharing them because you have not seen their persona. You don't know who they are. And you're just sharing to that to you. You're just putting it out there. But over time, you have built this relationship with your audience. And it's like, and let's call it an oblique relationship because you don't know who specifically you're speaking to. But they consuming your content and relating it to themselves have built that connection with you. And they're like, I know you.
Yeah. So, there's even a term for it, I think, to call it a parasocial relationship, where it's like you see this person, it usually happens to like gamers or live streamers, where people see them every day, all the time. You know, hey, chat, what's going on, chat? Yep. What's happening? People should vote for what I will play tomorrow. So this person is talking all the time and people are sitting there typing, thinking that they have a personal relationship with this person. They don't. And right. I think I'm just lucky that I've not had that kind of big audience, but I've had enough to recognize that it can be an issue. And it's even wonderful that we're in countries like Cameroon where someone can maybe find your address and come to your house, because I'm pretty sure there are people who, if you make a mistake and put your address there and say something, oh, you guys should send me stuff, someone will come and knock at your door and say, I watched your video and I want to have coffee. Right. And that's when you realize how unsafe it can be to put out information on the internet.
Right. I want us to step back a little bit. How? What's the best way you would want to describe yourself at this point? Because I know for those in my audience or for those who are watching this who might not know you, I would describe you as the host of the Kamga Chasa podcast. I would also say that you're an author, which you've written the book When a Boy Loves You, yeah. The Art and Science of Scribbling Ideas.
At this particular point in my time in life, what I'm finding out is, I would describe myself as someone who is trying really, really hard with his heart and mind and soul and spirit to follow Jesus.
Ooh.
What I mean by that is, I'm aware that I'm incompetent in that area of my life. I'm aware that there's a lot that comes into it. I'm aware that there's a lot of bias and things that I have to unlearn and relearn. And so the priority in my life now is, am I living in a way that if Jesus were to show up at my door today and say, okay, it's time to go, I'll actually be able to go with him.
All right.
So everything else, whether it's work, whether it's relationship, family, all those things fall under that idea of, am I present in my relationships in the way that Christ would like? Am I working the way that Christ would like? Am I planning for my family the way that Christ would like? So that's really the biggest umbrella of my life now. One who is following. So I'll call myself a Christian, a disciple, because I'm learning the Bible. I'm really studying to actually understand, not just to read and say, I know the story, but I'm learning to, how can I really know this, the word of God, and apply it in my life on a day-to-day basis? Yeah. Mm.
One of the things that I've really loved about you is the fact that it's an energy of always searching, always trying to learn, always trying to improve. And that cuts across like a theme in everything that you'd say. And it's part of the authenticity as well. For example, sometimes you start your podcast episode, you started and said, if you're watching this, I honestly don't know what you're going to learn. And I don't know what we're going to talk about, but let's go. And I'm like, okay.
I should do that more.
Instead, I'm like, how this, because intros are meant to be catchy. Intros are meant to keep me there wanting to listen to the rest of the episode. But how would you tell me that you don't know what I'm going to learn? Then you're expecting me to stay right up to the end. I'm like, okay. But I end up listening to it and I end up just living like so refreshed, so filled like I've had an entire conversation. And that That's is right. for me to kind of go a little back, and I'm trying to ask myself or trying to figure out first talk a bit about your upbringing, but I'm looking for that pivot moment where you went, this is how I need to start being now self-conscious and just trying to up the game in every other aspect of my life.
I would say the way that I grew up did not affect the way that I am now. Nah, that'll be true. However, I don't remember a lot of my childhood beyond, let me say, 10 and below. So I don't remember most of it. People say trauma causes people to do that. For me, it's like, I just forgot. I don't think it's trauma. I just don't remember. And what happened, if I were to speak to like my school, is I went to St. B's College 7 years. I was 10 when I actually went to Form 1. Opposite was 17, so 7 straight years. But there was a switch. There was an event, like one of those milestone events that changed the way that I saw the world. When I was 15 in Form 5, I had great grades. And I've told this story many, many times. I think it was a key changing moment for me to start looking at the world differently. 15, I knew I wanted to do the arts. I wanted to do history, literature, French. So I loved literature. I had wonderful teachers, Mr. Chia Eugene. And I really just enjoyed words and stories. I found out that I liked it. So I wanted to do that. Mm. The problem is, I passed the ordinary level too well. So when you're smart in Cameroon or most African countries, you have a very few options. You're either going to be a medical doctor or an engineer.
Yeah, and so right.
My parents, and of course, this was them trying to do the best for their children. They said, listen, young man, we know you love this writing thing, but you're too smart. I we think mm-hmm. that if you did this, you would put yourself in a better position to be able to make more money and earn for yourself. And that was them guiding me through the path that every normal person in their right mind would tell their child to do. So they didn't even tell me that. They actually sent me to a counselor to speak with a counselor to help me through that process. And the counselor told me similarly, like, these are the options that you can have if you did the sciences. So I was like, well, my parents think it's a good idea. The counselor thinks it's a good idea. That's what I'll do. And that's where my descent into confusion started, I think. Because from that point forward, I had to struggle in school. When before that, I didn't struggle a lot. And I didn't know I was struggling until later on because I struggled to pass the advanced level. I went to UB, started biochemistry and failed. We started after a year with medical laboratory science. After 3 years, I quit that as well.
Yeah, and then came to the gym, sir.
That's right. So the first key point was that 2005. The second one is 2011, 2012. At that point, it was also the end of a relationship and also the beginning of, I need to do something that I want to do now because last time I tried, something did not happen well. Choosing to do GMC was definitely the Holy Spirit working in my life. I could not recognize that at the time because nobody advised me to do it. Nobody said, here's something you should try. Nobody gave me any brochure or anything. What happened was, as I made that decision to get into GMC, I realized that sometimes I need to choose what I feel is right for me. And so restarting UB, something happens when you see all your friends get ahead of you and then you're the only one who is behind. You know, you're the only one who is... I had friends who came to UB doing medicine and they graduated when I was still in UB. So 7 years of me, I was in Boya from 2007 to 2015.
Someone
came and got degrees and left. I was still there on UB, which is something that in hindsight was a wonderful thing because by the time I was starting GMC, I was not new. I had nothing to prove to anybody. I wasn't trying to find out what UB life was like. I'd already done all the things that new students do. So I was serious. I think, now that I'm saying, I think my seriousness began because I'd done away with all the unseriousness. By the end of GMC, is another key point, I think, is what informed a lot of my vulnerability. I'll be remiss if I did not mention my friend Anne-Marie Befoun. She now has a podcast called Le Papotage de C. And I think she's in Senegal. She's a mom now. She writes a lot about parenting and that. So between 2013... 2014, we started a blog called Selfish on Medium. So Medium was just coming around the time. And we had never met. We're just, you know, talking on the internet. I was like, hey, let's do this thing. Let's write this thing. So Selfish, I think, was the brainchild that propelled both of us in two different directions, which was writing vulnerably about our struggles at a particular point in time. Because I tried to be president of GMC and then I quit because I did not like the politics. And then she was also figuring out a time in her career because she started doing some civil engagements. She was writing a lot about politics and things like that. And it wasn't working out the way she thought it was going to be. So she would write in French and I'll write in English and we'll write about these things at the same time. So I didn't know what she was writing. She wouldn't know what I was writing. We'll both come and read ourselves and just enjoy that collaboration of, hey, I really love what you wrote about this and I'll write there. So a lot of my vulnerable writing, if I put it that way, began fleshing itself out from Selfish. And the advantage that I have, I'm looking at it, is my parents, I guess, didn't read my writing. Because I'm sure if they were reading it, they'll probably tell me that I should not do that. A typical African parent will not allow their child to be writing the things that I wrote on the internet. And on the other hand, too, I think my parents had seen that I was able to make good decisions because I'd gone to GMC, my results were talking for themselves, I was taking care of myself, and I was doing something that I cared about. So they sort of came around to the idea. But trust me, switching to GMC was not a fun process in the house. My parents were not happy about it. But to speed to the vulnerability part, it's a lot of that writing and interacting with Anne-Marie and people and just going through that process of GMC.
Definitely does. And about GMC, which you just mentioned, are you open to sharing how that went and what made you quit? 100%,
man. I can talk about anything.
So what happened that made you quit from? Because I was in GMC at the time.
Yeah.
And literally, I think I just got in and I was at the second year or something. And just flash, I ended up spending 5 years as well.
Okay.
just to get to that.
What happened? What was the politics around it and what made you to quit and say, I would no longer be the president of GMC? Because that came as a shock to everyone, all of us who were in the department at the time.
What happened was, I was assistant public relations for the first year, I think, or was the second year. I don't remember how those things worked. And then the way that I became president was, the circumstances surrounding it were not exactly ideal. So when that began, what I thought was an opportunity to be able to change the way things were done ended up being a repetition of things that I didn't like. I don't like people who hide things, who manipulate. I don't like when there's undue influence, especially when it's negative. I believe that it's possible to influence people in the right manner for the right things without them even realizing it. But when I notice people who influence things in the wrong way, I don't like that.
Was this from within the student body?
Oh, yeah, student body. It wasn't even the administration. My problem was not with the administration. It was with the student body. So one person. So I actually talked with the head of the department at the time was Julius Chetita.
Yeah.
And he, you know, that's very, very nice, a very nice man. The way he talks is always very encouraging and very enthusiastic. I was like, no, come on, you just forget about these things. You know, just...
that's actually the voice.
So the first time I told him about it, I was like, nah, I don't like this. He's like, nah, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And so it was the first time, it didn't bother me a lot. The second time, we were in open commons. I still remember how that, what happened for me, because I knew I was going to quit before I even quit. We're open commons, sitting there trying to plan the, I think it was Azure party or something. And then some money was involved.
Okay.
I don't remember the details of what happened, to be honest. But then I said something, and this person was like, no, we cannot do that because it's not going to look good, or something about the way it would appear or why it's not a priority. And that was the moment I realized whatever idea that I had of building a GMC, setting new patterns, like working on things that were actually constructive, people are going to focus on the party. They're going to focus on the drinking. They're going to focus on the things that look flashy, not the substance, not the structure, not the next level of how can we improve the radio? How can we get people who come here and provide jobs? How can we get internships? So I was looking at serious things, but this person was very focused on the party and was going to influence our resources to affect the party. So that was when I decided, after this thing, I'm going to leave this place. So
did you ever look back at that decision and you went, I shouldn't have quit, or maybe I did the right thing?
How do
you
feel about it? That was the best thing I ever did. I enjoyed my final year in GMC so much because I did not have the weight of that responsibility. The thing is, over time, I'm finding out about who I am a lot more because I'm realizing that when I take responsibility for things, or when I feel bad about something, when I do something wrong, nobody needs to punish me. I'll punish myself. And I don't mean that in a sadistic way. It's more of, I will think about it. I'll try to figure out how could I fix it. So if it's within me, I'm fine with dealing with the problem. When the problem is external and someone else, that becomes too much. And I'm sure it's something that God is trying to teach me now to learn how to do, because life doesn't revolve around me. Because the way I look at decisions is, if it's not going to affect you down the road, if it's going to take a week to do it, you know, just get out. Just now, if the presidency of GMC was like 3 years, if there were, you know, terms, renewable, sure, I would have worked through it. Played the politics, learned, tried to get the influence, but it was too short a time for me to invest that much energy. So I thought to myself, rather than spend this much on something that's not going to matter this much,
that's a fairly very interesting perspective on decision making. So what you're saying is, if the decision you're going to make is not going to affect like a very long term, it's okay to hastily or to at least make that decision.
There's this book actually, but I think it's a Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. I've never read the book, but the main idea is there are two ways of thinking. You need to know when you should think fast versus when you should think slow. And this also gets me think about this guy, Naval Ravikant, said something about you should take risks insofar as they're not going to ruin you. Like, for example, if you come up with a business idea and it's not going to send you to prison or you know, empty your bank account, try it quickly. Don't think too much. Just hurry up and get it done. When I look back at what would I get from being a president of Azure, I don't see anything that I could have gotten. What prestige has? I don't see what I would have, what, how would have changed my life now.
Another very interesting perspective on decision making was I heard someone say that, and it's simple and straight to the point, make the decision anyway, because you're going to have to make a decision. And he gave an example, and he said, think about two people who go to school. One becomes a pilot, one becomes a trader, right? And the pilot and the trader is there looking at the pilot, is like, oh, like all my years of school, look at what I've become. Maybe I'm not making as much money, or maybe I'm not as respected as the pilot. And then it happens that the pilot takes a flight, and shortly after, he's gone.
Nice. Yeah.
And then you look at it, you go, I'm happy that I became a trader.
So it's all perspective. I heard something similar with Gary Vaynerchuk when he was talking about which decision, what should you go to college or should you start the business?
Right.
A very similar story of, imagine you started a business, you made a lot of money, then you travel in your private jet, it crashed. Would you have gone to college?
Ooh.
Or you go to college, you start working in corporate America, and then, I don't know, building crashes and you die. Like, it doesn't matter which one you make. Yeah. Decide. Just decide and don't look back.
You have a very interesting perspective about grief. And when I heard you talk about the passing of your junior sister, I knew that that was something that was so dear to your heart.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as to if you could walk us through how that happened, but most importantly, how that changed you, your perspective as a person, and how you started to do things differently. Because I could ship a bunch of details, but I will let you tell the story.
Yeah. So my sister, Raisa, I will never forget my sister until I die. For me, that's a legacy that she leaves on. And the way it has really changed me is it's given me an opportunity to see how different people process grief, including myself. It's one thing to imagine somebody dying. It's one thing to imagine that this is the last time that you and I will have a conversation. It's another thing for it to actually be.
That's hitting hard.
Yeah. And so my sister was diagnosed in July of breast cancer. And then she didn't get the opportunity to have tradition to go through the process of doing chemotherapy. So by the time she was saying, okay, let's do chemotherapy, it was already too late. She passed. And it was a very short period, a very brief period. It was, what, a couple of months, July, then she died by October. October 14. No, that's when we buried her. Oh, yeah. September 29. So watching my family go through that and seeing how different people react to grief gave me a very changed perspective of grief. And it was also a time when I got really angry. And my relationship with God, too, was not the way it is now. So when I look back then and I see how painful it was, I realized how less painful it could have been if I actually really understood what it was like to be a human being.
What was the thing you understood in that point?
We are all passing through. And depending on how we live here, life after this is based on what we do now. And my sister is no longer in pain. And I want to believe that she's in heaven. So the way I see it is, and this is for people who don't believe that there's heaven. I do believe that there's heaven and hell. I do believe that Christ is a savior who came to take us all away from this. I don't call it nonsense. This is great. So for more of this life. And if I were to call my sister now and say, hey, do you want to come back here and pay bills and deal with the pain of cancer?
No, I'm good.
I'd be like, why? She's having the time of her life. So that perspective allows me to not, it's not like I'm happy. I miss my sister, of course. It would be nice if she
would. But it's happened. That's happened.
It would be wonderful if I could call her. I still have videos that I watch. I still have texts. She's the one who taught me how to cook chicken. When I was going through my divorce, she was there with me. She's the one who was fighting for her. Like, I watched my sister go through this phase of, when she was younger, when I look at her parents and the way that her parents raised us, she went through the hardest kind of raising from her parents because she was the first girl. So my parents had to learn how to parent a girl child with her. And she grew up into this wonderful woman, was very pushful. She would take her dreams and go forward with them. She was very exuberant. She did not take nonsense from anybody. So she lived her life well. She lived her life to the best of my observation. Like, she's not here to say that, but she lived her life well. 26 years old, not too long. Yeah, people who die at 12, babies who die before they even leave the hospital. So it's really all about perspective. Grief gave me perspective. It gave me a chance to look every single day as an opportunity that God has given me that my sister is not going to have. So when I look at things now, I'm looking at, man, I get to do this thing that my sister will never do. So I miss her, and I know that she's in a better place where she has none of this pain. And also, it's given me a different idea of how I look at my life or any life. So, which goes back to the beginning of our conversation. I'm very serious about life because life is serious and people die. So if this were the last conversation that we ever had, would I be happy with the way it ended? If this was the last job that I ever did, would my employer actually miss me or just be a number that they were sending money to? So for me, the personal relationships in my life have become really serious and I really invest in them. And I make sure that people know what I'm thinking. If I'm not happy with you, you would know. If I'm happy with you, you would know. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier. I give compliments now because I actually mean them. And I try to find compliments to give because I don't know when next I'll see you. And it could be extreme. On the other hand, too, it's real. Life is fickle. Yeah. Life is short. We don't know how long we have. And so while we are here, we really have to understand why and also make sure that we're prepared for the next life. Because for someone who believes that Jesus came to save them and they don't spend their time seeking him while they still can, there is a time when it's going to be too late. And I say that for myself more than for anybody. Like, I want to make sure that when Christ is around, I'm like, yeah, I did my own. You know, I'm a good and faithful servant. I did what I had to do. So my sister gave me that gift. She gave me the gift of life. Every time I think of her, I know that I will die. So I better be ready on any single day.
Oh, that's deep. Yeah, that's deep. Let me tell you, I'm going to open up to you and tell you something, which, and to those that are watching this, and then I don't know if that's a question, but let me tell you anyway.
Oh, yeah.
One of my biggest fears right now is getting a call and saying, X and X, your mom, your dad is not.
Yeah.
I dread that day of my life with every, as I speak to you right now, I feel like hairs is standing on my head. I love my mom to death. I love my dad to death. And I feel like the kind of life that I want to give them, I may have started at my little beginning or at the small things that I'm doing. But I want them to be there when I make the biggest break of my life. And I want to carry my trophy and watch them celebrating with me, at least at some point, right? But I dread that day. What would you say to me?
What I'll ask you is, what makes you think that there's a trophy at the end of it? What makes you think that you are not, like right now, you right now calling them is not the trophy? You right now thinking about them like this, this is the trophy. That they get to have a child who cares about them like this. There is no proverbial trophy where you get, there's no amount of money. There's no place that you will take them and then they'll suddenly understand that you love them. Love is every day. It's every conversation. It's not at some point that you're like, daddy, I wired you $2 million. Then that'll be like, my son loves me. Nah. It's the call. It's the regular check-ins. It's the conversation, the authenticity, the appreciation. So for me,
I'm happy if this goes to a therapy session.
We all need therapy. My therapy is the Bible right now. But you know, in Ecclesiastes, King Solomon talks about everything is meaningless. But then in the end, he talks about don't forget the Lord, you know, while you're young. Mm-hmm. And for me, when my sister was diagnosed, I started imagining her dying. Like, I pictured the process.
Oh my God.
The reason why.
What's up, guys? If you're watching this, I just wanted to break here to give you some important news. So we have just launched the Smart Club, which is my private mentorship club for anyone who wants to learn a high income digital marketing skill. Whether you're building your personal brand, whether you want to become a freelancer, a service provider, or your goal is to learn the skill and get a high income digital marketing job, the Smart Club is the place for you. We have 12 plus digital marketing skills that we're going to teach you through live classes. So every week for the next couple of months, I'm literally going to mentor you personally and make sure that you reach your goal with your digital marketing skills. So down below, I just wanted to break and give you a very quick shout out. Down below, there's going to be a link. Make sure you check it and enroll before you keep watching the rest of the video. And I look forward to seeing you on your very first club session.
I think it didn't hit me as hard. And it's just what I do, I think, in my personality too. Is like I think through things. I imagine them. When I want to go on a trip, I picture the journey. I see where the problems could happen. I try to stop them before they happen. So when I pictured her dying, what I tried to do between that time was to just be present and do my best while I could, while I was there. So that when I got that call, I did not have any regrets. Are there things that I wish I'd done differently? Yes. But regrets, none whatsoever, because I knew that I did everything that I could do within my best ability at that time. So I don't have any regrets of things being wrong. I don't have any things that I'm holding back. And so where I've translated a lot of this is, instead of writing about these things now, where like the way I used to a few years ago, I not just leave them. I leave them with my sister and my brother, because I still have a younger sister and a brother. They are still here. I still have my parents. They're here. I have my wife. They're here. So I have people that they rely on me to be strong. And I don't mean strong like walking around me muscular.
Emotional support in many ways.
Exactly. And also just leadership. And just pastoral work, because every man should be the pastor of his house.
Yeah.
And what I would tell you really is, don't wait for a day in the future. Do it now. there is this guy, his name is, well, you know Jordan Peterson probably. And there's this young man, he has like these albums where he takes these speeches, his talks, and he makes them into music. One of them is called Life is Suffering. It's a speech that Jordan Peterson gave a long time ago. And one of the things that he's saying there is basically, you have to become the kind of man that people can count on you on your dad's funeral. That people can rely on you. Like, I've listened to that thing as I'm talking about it, I'm getting good. Like, I've listened to that thing probably like 100 times. Is the idea that when your father dies, everybody will break down around. You should be the person that can stand. Not because you're not feeling anything. Not because you don't have feel. No, it's not suppress yourself, don't feel. It's you have to build the kind of strength that allows you to go through those dark times. Because if you live long enough, the people you love will die. It's just the reality of life. And that's why without Jesus, honestly, things are just a lot more difficult. They are already tough now. Without that hope, without the grace, without the Holy Spirit, it's just worse. People think that being a Christian means that your life will be easy, it will be fun, you will not have no pain, people will not die, everybody will be healed, all the demons will be cast out, you'll be rich. But as I'm learning now, you can still have, two people can have the same problem. They can both be laid off, both be divorced, both be in pain. One is a Christian, and the perspective in which you look at the world is, I'm going through this process. This is my offering. I'm offering my life as a sacrifice to Christ. I'm carrying the cross. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. The other person will be, life is not fair. Life sucks. Life is terrible. I hate my life. Hashtag something. But for me, following Christ means that when things happen, I look at it from the perspective of, what am I supposed to learn here? What is God trying to teach me through this process?
Yeah.
Especially when things don't work out. Especially when things don't work out. When things are great, I'm like, God, thank you. I'm blessed, but I don't take it for granted. Like this conversation right now, for me, this is wonderful. I get to share my thoughts with somebody who actually wants to listen. So I have to be present. I have to constantly be reminded that this could be the last conversation that we have. So if I don't give my everything now, when will I give it? When I'm next week, next month? Like, oh no, let me get a better microphone. Let me do... Postponing our lives is something that my sister told me is a bad idea. Don't postpone your life. Don't postpone the compliments. Don't postpone the mistakes. Don't postpone the honesty. If you care about somebody, tell them that you care about them. Don't wait for when you're feeling good about it or when they've done something so they can tell them and it's balanced out.
Mm-hmm.
Life is not balanced.
I think if there's a theme that has run through our conversation from the beginning right up to now, I would say is, I don't know the right way to words to put it, but like being an all or nothing person. Because
sounds I dangerous. Hear
you. Yeah. And a thing that I increase even in my private mentorship, the Smart Club.
Yeah.
And I relate that to almost everything I do. And I say to them, look, if you want to be in a relationship, put in your best, be in a relationship. Yeah. Make sure that you're bringing in your A game. And I actually, for me, I will actually tell the girl, I tell you, I say, look, hey, we're not fully around here. I'm bringing my A game and I need your A game on the table.
100%.
Because we have to bring this. And if you flip that to business, if you flip that to volunteerism,
yeah.
If you flip that even to church, when you go to church and you have to show up, I am an instrumentalist in church. And when I, from the day I signed up and I said to church, I was going to be there to play the bass guitar, every Sunday I show up. Regardless of how I feel, regardless of how cold it is, I would show up because it is my responsibility and also because it is my word as a person for me to keep to my word. When I started back with my journey, I started back with my journey, in my second year, I started writing for Cameroon Herald newspaper. And when I started writing, I remember I spoke to the publisher. I called him up. Hello, sir. Congratulations on your work. I just noticed you don't have some stories from Boya. I'm a student, but I'd love to contribute and send in some stories. It's like, okay, cool. I'll be in your city in 2 weeks. Let's talk. Boom. We had a conversation. I started writing. No fee, no money, nothing. And I literally wrote for an entire year. He will call me, send me out on coverage. Hey, there's this meeting at the deals office. There's this at the governor's office. And I'll show up. I do the work. Newsflash, the only money or the highest money that I ever received from writing for 1 year was 18,000 francs. And I even remember I took that 18,000 francs, went to church and I dropped it at the altar. And I said to God, I don't know how this is going to look like, but this is like my first fruit. I don't even know how first fruit works. I literally, I don't know, but I dropped it, and I remember showing it on the giving that to my man of God, and he opened it in front of me and asked me why are the notes so straight. I can never forget. But the point is, 1 year after consistently writing for Camara Herald, I see this advert on Facebook, and it says there's a magazine that's opening up, and they're looking for new writers. The Gideon magazine. At the time, the publisher was based in the US. I think he's still based in the US, and they're extending the publication to Cameroon. They're looking for writers. So I show up, still a student, have no idea whether I'm going to get the job or not. I get in, there are a couple of people that he has to interview. And so when I go there, he says, "What's your experience? What do I show?" The papers, the newspapers, and the copies of my stories that I've been writing for Cameroon Herald. And he says, "Okay. Sounds like this is interesting. I think I went with about 4 or 5 publications." And I said, "Ray, you can start next month." So for Legidia Magazine, I became the senior content producer.
Yeah.
And I was still a student, not yet graduated, but I was senior content producer. And I was controlling all the entire story. But that's how far being an all of nothing person. I know it was a very long story, but for me.
No, it's not. I take that into
everything I do. And I'm like, I'm either going to do it very well, I won't do it very well. It's not to say that I'm perfect in everything, but
no one is.
Most of the things, there's so many things I know that I'm lacking in, but I quickly identify that and I'm like, how do I start to work on this? You were going to say something.
Yes. Recall what you said when you tell the story about how you got into Cameroon Herald and the Gideon, it got the word that came to my mind was a phrase that the pastor said today, which is consistency doesn't happen by accident. You don't show up consistently accidentally. Like, it's planned. You have to really want to be consistent in order to be consistent, and I'm seeing the work that you've put in. It shows in your results. You're doing a lot of things. Like, truth is, you're putting in the work and it's coming out, so there is no way that will happen. And the sad thing is, people look at work, different kinds of work, whether it's relationship work, business work, school work, and forget that they are already built with an ability in certain areas of their lives. So they might compare themselves to you or to me or to anybody else and look at the work that they put in or the work that they're doing effortlessly without seeing the parts in their life where they could actually do the same effortless work. For example, someone might be a terrible writer, but a great speaker. And so they will see a writer and say, "Man, I wish I could write like this. I wish I could send this 5,000 words." But they haven't yet used the gifts that God has given them in the areas that they have to build not just the skill, but the confidence that could easily translate in them learning the other skill that they want. All this to say that consistency, showing up on the small things, how you do anything is how you do everything. I don't remember who said that, but it's like the way you do small things is how you do big things. If you cannot manage 100 francs, why would God bless you with 1,000 francs or 10,000 francs or 100,000 francs? If you cannot manage a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, which I think is a bad idea, you should be going for marriage anyway. Why would God give you a marriage? If you cannot actually be a proper boyfriend to actually pursue a woman right, why would you bless the marriage?
Talk to me about your perspective on money, which you just talked about. I'm curious how you, one of your videos you talked about, you said after your marriage failed, and then it was a point where you went back and started to think about many things in your life. And one of those things was financially as well. And it was, no. This was after you moved to the US. You said moving to the US, it was, I think, I did a video like five things you learned.
Yeah.
Five things you learned after moving to the US.
I'm also supposed to say that the way you do your research is you make your guests want to just talk about their whole life story. So this is great. keep it up. Seriously. You know, people like to hear about themselves a lot. So I'm really enjoying this. In Cameroon, we don't have a credit system. You don't exactly go and take a loan unless, I don't even know who takes loans. Like, parents only take loans for like Credit Scolaire. That's the only loan that I know in Cameroon that banks give you. Mm-hmm. You understand a business, I don't know, you go to Njangi. So we don't have an established financial culture. America has a different structure. You know, student loans exist. So you can borrow money and go to school. You can go and get a car note, which is basically borrowing money from a bank at interest to pay for a car. You can borrow money, and usually most people have to borrow money to buy a house, which is called a mortgage. So it's a system where money is not directly linked to what you have. Can look different from what you actually own in terms of financially, like getting money in the bank. So coming here and seeing how that works, it's easy for someone who has not been in that kind of system to start getting credit cards, buying cars, doing all these things. And then you only find out later on that the price that you pay for this is interest, which means you can borrow $1,000 and end up paying $5,000 on that $1,000 that you borrowed, because interest rates are pretty high. You pay often up to 20% more, 22, 29% even of what you borrowed. And if you don't pay that money and you default, they can get collectors to come and get the money from you. What it happens, the reason why this exists is because of what they call a credit score.
Yeah.
FICO, I think, I don't know, there's the full meaning, I don't remember what the full meaning is, but basically there's a group of three companies that give you a number that shows how good you are with money. And before you borrow money from a bank, the bank checks your number.
They need to run, yeah.
Yeah, they run the number to find out. Check. Yeah, so it's from 0 to 80, I think it's 850 or 800. So anybody with an 800 score is like, you're good with money. But that's misleading. And I know now that it's misleading because I've been reading a lot about money, about Bitcoin and all things like that. Because right. What this basically says is that you're good at borrowing money and paying back. It's not that you're good at money.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
And the sad thing too with borrowing money is that you get comfortable with money that is not yours. So if, for example, every month you're borrowing money and paying things and you're paying that money back, you end up almost always at zero.
And it's a loop.
Yeah, it's a loop. So you're never having savings. You're never having money because the psychology is, well, if I don't have the money, I can put it in a credit card and pay it off next month. Now, when you have an emergency, you easily tend to go and use a credit card, forgetting that you can pay more on that money. But to come back to the question about how I learned about money is, when I found myself alone and realizing that my mother was going to help me, my father would not help me, nobody's coming to save me in this country, I had to educate myself. I had to learn about the system. I had to get my first credit card, had to understand how it worked, how to think about interest and all that stuff. So going through that process of learning, finding out that getting all the credit cards, buying things and realizing, oh, if I don't pay this thing fast, I'll actually owe money on it.
Yeah.
That was my own quick learning lesson in financial education in America. Money and learning about money can easily become a rabbit hole that distracts away from what is important. Because all the money in the world would not save us from disease. It will not save us from damnation. It will not save us from heartbreak. It will not save us from terrible relationships. So starting to learn about money exposed me to how everything is related. For example, if you don't work out or you don't eat healthy, no amount of money is going to give you health. If you have all the money in the world and it's you alone in your house by yourself, you're not going to feel like you can't share difficult moments or great times with anybody. So as much as I'm learning about money, I'm also learning about what money can do and what money cannot do. Right. And also about how people are sacrificing their lives for money in the sense that it doesn't make sense, which goes back to something we'll talk about, the all or nothing. It's making me realize, yes, there are many ways you could make money, but you need to find the ways that work for you, your goals, your dreams, and your gifts that God has given you.
Exactly.
Not all the ways will work. So what I'm learning now is sometimes there are things that could make money that I know, yeah, this could make money, but I'll say no to it. And focus on what I really want to do, which works in line with what I'm going on my values.
When I started blogging and people saw that I was good with blogging and WordPress, they'll say to me, Eric, could you come and train our teams? And I'll come in, I train their team, and they will learn how to do that. But here's the flip side of the story. Scammers as well started watching that I was good with website. They knew that I could create content, and they'll approach me and say, Eric, could you have your team create content for my website? And they will bring your website like a dog website.
Yeah.
They're expecting you to create content around five things you should know about dogs, this is and this, because you know that the process of scamming, when you go to we follow on a website, even if it's fake, and you go there, they've created a couple of blog articles, it looks like this is real because they literally have
content.
A social media agency or a social media team that is actually working on this. And so I started to get these approaches from scammers, and they were ready to pay good. Honestly, I did the first one. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
And at some point, I said to myself, no, I this is not who I want to be known for. This is against my values. And fast forward to now that I run a marketing agency and we're helping businesses to get clients on social media using Facebook, Instagram ads, and the rest. I decided, and I say this to every team member that I onboard, during their onboarding, I say to them, as a marketing agency, I would never promote a product that does not tie with my values, irrespective of how much you give me. But the reason why I'm sharing that story is because I wanted to ask you how this has applied to your journey. Has there been moments where you decide where there is like, I have to understand the line where I have to cross, set the terms for my values, the do's and the don'ts, and how I want this to be applicable in my career, my journey?
Your question is making me think, and I like it because most people don't know how to ask questions that make people think. And previously it was easier because it was just me. I make decisions based on what I think, what I believe, what is my moral values and my way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, because I now have a wife in my life, it's a little bit different because now I have to take into consideration what she's thinking. One of the things I've always promised my wife is I'll listen to what you say, even if I disagree. Always. Forever.
Oh, that's very powerful.
So for me, it's even if I know where I stand, I'll listen to what she has to say. And then from there, decide, okay, where do I want to stand now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've not had many of those in my past life because it was very easy for me.
I really love what you just said.
Yeah.
I listen to what you have to say, even if I disagree.
Yeah, I try to extend it to everybody. It's not difficult. It's a lot difficult. What I'll say to that, when you were talking, I was thinking of, there's a phrase in this movie that I love. This movie is a Sucker Punch. It's not very old, 2011. It's an action movie. But one of the things that like the mentor figure in the movie says, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. That right. phrase stayed with me when I heard it the first time. I don't think it's from the movie. It's probably before that. But to your point, in America, I'll take where I live right now. There are many ways that people could make money that are legit, but I would say I'll consider them lazy. Me, lazy, but somebody else will be a lot of work for them. But for me, it will be mm-hmm. lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I look at it is what you said, which is that's not the kind of person that I want to be. Depending on who I consider myself to be, the identity that I have.
Yeah.
And it's, I want to say tougher, but it becomes really, really interesting when you want to be a Christian, when you want to follow the way that Christ works, when you understand what it means to follow Christ, not the label, not the church, not the casting of demons. It's what in this situation am I doing that will make Christ proud? Because it's not about what I want. It's not about what my wife will be like, oh, that's cool. I love my husband. It's not about my brother be like, I'm so proud of you. It's not about, this man had a wonderful guest. It was so amazing. It's what will Christ say? So it's scary for me because sometimes I look at my life, I'm like, I'm not living that life. And I'm afraid that if I don't take the time to catch up and hurry and get back to where I'm supposed to be, I'll die. And then I'll just end up being like, oh, you had all this opportunity to repent. What happened? Like, oh, waiting for the right time. But to answer your point is, even the jobs, like for example, I work with a nonprofit, Christian nonprofit. I'm so happy that I work, I get to pray. For me, it's like, man, I don't have to worry about office politics. I don't have to worry about my faith. I don't have to worry about that because God has really put me in a position where I literally get to pray. My work is service to God. So I'm blessed. That's why when you ask the question, I mean, in my life, that I'm blessed 100%. Mm-hmm. And so looking at my friendships and my relationships, there are certain things that people do, including my close family members, disagreements that we have where I look at it and say, the old me would have gotten upset, gotten angry, get annoyed and block somebody. Now, me, who wants to work with Christ, I cannot afford to do that. So the line of morality and my value system is no longer based on how I feel, or at least I try not to be. I'm a human being. Of course, at times I fail and I have to go and ask God to forgive me. But when I can, the effort is, can I pick the path that Christ will be proud of? Can I do the thing? So, and that's across the board. It's like now I'm trying to say hello to my neighbors. Like I'm not exactly walking around happy to people and just jumping up and out. But I'm like, Christ will want me to talk to my neighbors and say hello and eventually tell them about him. So I'm not doing it because I want to. You know, so I'm doing it because that's what I'm supposed to do as one who follows Christ and wants to make fishers or want to fish men.
One of the things you talked about, your marriage, which I was sort of fascinated that you were happy to share about. But one of the things you talked about, you said you thought you knew marriage. You thought that because you had maybe been in a relationship before, it was okay to just say, oh, we'll get into marriage and we'll figure things out. But there were the nitty-gritties of it that hit you when you got into marriage, and things that were very basic within the marriage, which you felt you knew, but applied differently when you were already inside of the marriage. And so I wanted to ask you, what did that process, you going through divorce, or what did that process teach you? What was the thing that you didn't know that you know now, which you're applying, and how is that different in maybe relationships moving forward? And most importantly, how someone listening to this right now, what they can take from it, from your experience.
Man, I love this topic too much. Sometimes I'm worried that I'll end up being one of those people on the internet. I'll end up being like, what's this woman's name? Side-eye people on the internet. I think it's Deli. Yes, I've just been watching what she's doing. Like, I don't read it a lot, but I'm like, man, this whatever she's doing is working and it's impressive.
Anyway, I need to have her.
Right? Yeah. I will have her on the podcast. I think it would be great to listen to her story. I will speak from a man's perspective because that's all what I have anyway. And so what I thought that I knew was that when you're ready for marriage, you just get in and you'll figure it out. I don't think you figure out marriage. Now, what I know now is that the foundation of your values and morals needs to be grounded on something that is bigger than you or your desire for intimacy or your desire for children or family. If your marriage is not rooted in the Bible, it will most likely fail. Even if it doesn't fail, it's going to be a glorified roommate for the rest of your life. What do I mean by that? If I went back and grounded my marriage on the Bible, there are things that would have been exposed either early or would have been easier to work upon. So what I thought I knew was the feelings, was the communication, was the differences men and women, was the different roles, the responsibilities and all that. But what I know now is if you're going to love your wife the way Christ loves the church, it's a very sacrificial kind of love and it's not a fun kind of love. It's not the love that is selfies, lovey-dovey, she brings food, you eat, you know, whenever you need her, she's at the beck and call. It's a kind of love where it's, man, this woman is annoying, but I chose, I took her away from her father, I took her away from her mother, and she's my responsibility. So no matter how annoying she is to me, to Christ, she's his daughter, and I'm supposed to treat her with respect, with love, with the attention, and give her to make sure that she's safe. And it can replace annoying with, you know, whether it's stubborn, replace annoying with any word. Whatever it is that she's doing at a particular point that is bothering you, it's not about you and her, it's about you and Christ. Because he's the one that will give you the vulnerability, the patience, the leadership, the calmness, even the words to speak. If I rely on myself, the books that I read, if anybody listening to this as a man who wants to get married, if you are relying on your knowledge of what marriage or relationships are, you are most likely going to fail. You could work. Mm. It may work. There's a chance it would work. 100%. Everything is possible.
We don't want to bet on that, do you?
Exactly. You don't want to bet on a chance. You want to bet on certainty. And certainty is that, what somebody said, the only thing that's certain in life is death and taxes. And I'll add Christ too. Certainty is, when I look at marriage, because marriage is a covenant. People can say what they want to say about marriage or how whatever the government has come into it. It's a covenant between you and God. People think it's a covenant between two people. That's what I thought. You and your wife, to death do us part. No. When you make that vow, when you make that covenant, it's not between the two of you or the people around. It's between you and God that I am choosing to be a husband, I'm choosing to be a wife. So it's not about how the person in front of you is behaving. It's about, are you doing your job? Let me actually back up a little bit. Okay. Before you want to choose a woman, or a girl, like say, I want to marry this person. You have to ask yourself, are you ready to be a husband? Because people look at the other person, they look at everything that she's bringing to the table, the proverbial table that everybody's fighting about on the internet. But you look at yourself, are you ready to carry the burden of responsibility, of leadership? Are you ready to be the person that she can rely on, not just financially, spiritually, but emotionally? Can you be her pastor? Can you be a dad? The reason why I think many marriages fail, including mine, is because we see only that we're short-sighted. Like, oh, I'll figure it out. But we don't understand that it's a risk to be married. It's a risk to make a covenant with God if you are not ready to keep your end of the bargain. Which is why I think most people shouldn't date at all until when they're ready to get married, both men and women. But for men especially, don't date if you're broke. And I'm saying this in the simplest way possible because it's not that money makes a relationship. It's that for you to get to the point where you're making money, you transform yourself. That personal development that you went through, it's necessary to know self-discipline, responsibility, accountability, self-awareness.
Emotional intelligence. Everything.
Exactly. Negotiation. Communication. Those are skills that you would need as a husband, as a dad, as a member of society. So if you hurry up, you find somebody, she looks great, and you're like, oh, I want to get married, I want to date. You lose an opportunity to transform yourself, to allow the Holy Spirit to work through you, through the processes, through the failures, to get to the point where when you meet a woman, you can tell her, I want to marry you. And she's not, she knows that you're not messing around. And she says no. You're like, you know what? It's nice knowing you. And you walk away. Most people don't know how to walk away. I'm getting out of topic here because I'm thinking of my guys who are stuck. you know, we women who told them no, and they're like, oh, I love this woman, she's the best thing that could have. Yeah, you should be the best thing that happened to her, and she can be the best thing that happened to you. So if someone doesn't want you, either you're not ready or you're not the one for them. Both, you walk away and become the person who is ready or the person who actually wants you. So what I didn't know then was that those things had to happen before I got married. I thought I would figure it out through the process. That did not happen because time got cut short. But now I'm taking it differently. I'm not looking to my intelligence. I'm not looking to the internet. I'm looking to the Bible. What does St. Paul, for example, talk about marriage? How do we structure, put ourselves in position to be good husbands and good leaders in society? Because those skills cut across. And having the value system as a Christian as what is really been one thing that has helped me see how to be a better husband now. Not my intelligence, not my books, is really that. Yes, I would add that was the process. That's part of what happened because I went through this, you know, I want to say spiral, but it was a time when, actually, when that marriage ended, I was lost. Because I was like, I came to this country for this. Now it's over. What am I supposed to do? I had really tied myself to the identity of being a husband. It was so much, I'll write, oh, even my bio. Yeah. So I moved and came to the U.S. predominantly because of that. Oh, that was, no, yeah, I moved countries. I left Cameroon to the U.S. at the time because the person that I got married to was here. So when that marriage ended, I wanted to go back to Cameroon because I was like, who am I now? I don't know who I am because, and that's another problem. If you tie your identity to the things of this world, you're going to lose because things will pass. Marriages end, money goes away, health declines, old age, all the things of this world are fickle. So tying our identity to things that will go away is a losing battle. And that's what I did. Now, as much as I'm enjoying my marriage right now, I'm looking at it as, let me not forget what is most important. This is great. This is wonderful. It's like having your children and you really love them. But you have to remember that you're there to teach them how to survive in the world, not for them to love you. Like your goal is not for the children to be in love with you. It's for them to be capable, to be independent at some point. They should not need you. So, but yeah, that transformation really took place at the end of that because I had to question who I was, what my goals were, where I was going, and decide where I was going to be and who I was going to become.
Moving forward for you, what are some of the things you're working on? I know that you just started, you're building the community as a Salesforce administrator. You're trying to groom others so that under you, and for those who want to at least learn a skill in Salesforce so that they can transition their jobs, maybe work from home. And what's happening for you moving forward, and especially with the community that you're starting to build?
I have a lot of things I'm working on. I'm trying to reduce them because I tend to have so many ideas and I don't execute on them. So, but I'm excited. And this is actually the first time I'll be saying this. I don't know when this will be out, but people will probably hear this for the first time here because I've actually been offline for about almost 2 months, like just not posting as much, not doing anything because I am waiting. It sounds weird, but I'm waiting on God to basically tell me when to start. And also part of it is just I'm lazy. And what I'm working on is my reaction channel, which part of one thing that you said earlier, which got me thinking of the reaction channel was, sometimes you find yourself having to decide who you're going to be known as. My reaction channel, reaction videos picked up on my YouTube channel. People started following me for that. And I had to question myself, do I want to be known as a reaction guy? And I didn't. So it was getting a lot of views. I have one video with 100,000 views on YouTube. And I was like, I don't want to be known as this guy. But then over time, I realized I can take that separately and react to the things that I want to react. So that'll be coming up. But the thing that I'm personally excited about for 2024 specifically is the book club. So I'm starting a book club and it'll be mostly on Instagram. It's a book club where we one book per month and, you know, one session per month. I'm trying to get people to start enjoying reading again and picking books that I've read and dissecting those books to help people get perspective from a book. There are too many books and no one can read all the books on earth. So I really believe that it's important to be able to recommend books and have people extract the most that they can get from a book. So the book club will be really like a private community. I'm still wondering if it's going to be paid or free. Probably one of the two, or maybe free. But that's something that I'm working on. I'm very excited about. That's why I have all those books behind there to go through the process. So, and for the Salesforce community, I took a step back on that because it was quite intensive. It required me to really focus on each individual student. I was putting a lot of effort. So, yeah, those are the three things. Like the book club, the podcast will be coming back. I'm working really on being more efficient with content, not just creating as much as I can, but creating a process, because it's just me. I don't have a team. I don't want to hire a team until the system can pay for itself. Until then, it's me. So if there's one thing that I really am excited about is the book club. Yeah.
The last question we'd always ask everyone who has been on the podcast is, when all is said and done, how do you want to be remembered as Jasa Kamga?
Honest. That's one thing that I want to be remembered as. Yeah. If there's anything that I want to remember, I was honest. I know it's a short answer, but what it means is that I was real. I was there. What you saw was what you got. I was authentic. Not because I'm special, but because I believe that every single person that God made has something to bring. And the more you can bring that, the more you can bring your true self, the more you can live a life that will make him proud of the fact that he made you. So I want to be remembered as myself. Not special, but God's creature, Kamga. Yeah.
Kamga, I want to thank you for a very deep, insightful, and interesting conversation. I really did enjoy this. As much as it might have been an episode for you, but it was for me as well, because it's like some good therapy to myself. So thank you for doing this. And I truly appreciate your time being here.
Thank you very much for having me, man. I look forward to listening to more. This was very, very insightful for me as well. I get to hear my own thoughts and hear how you think and hear your story. And I think what you're doing is amazing for the community. I love that your friends are really enjoying this. And man, I know that you're only scratching the surface of the things I want to do. And the one thing that I really want you to remember is that this is the trophy. Getting to spend time like this and do all these things. This is it. So hello to your parents and to your friends, smart friends. I like that term.
I'm definitely taking that away from this conversation. This is the trophy.
If you just enjoyed this episode, the chances are that you're going to love other amazing episodes that we've recorded. So don't forget to check that out in the suggestion. And please hit the follow button so that you can keep in touch every time we publish an episode. Down in the description below, you'll find links to really helpful resources and also links to connect with the guest so that you can keep in touch with their amazing work. Like I always say, my friends, cheers to many more years of shamelessly living and crazily excelling in passion and purpose. And I'll speak to you in the next episode.